Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the nerdiest podcast in the Midwest, an episode where we're going to be returning to Wakanda and visiting a galaxy far, far away on the Midwestern Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Brian Stoffel, joined, as always, by my co-host and partner in crime,
K.O. Kyle Olson.
We are the Midwestern Nerds. That's MIDWESTERNERDS. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Midwestern Nerds. We are the Midwestern Nerds podcast on Facebook. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send that to MidwesternNerds@gmail.com. You can find and stream, listen to our podcast wherever you find your podcasts. This week, we are in the aftermath of Wakanda Forever. We spent a whole episode talking about our initial thoughts on it. We haven't had the chance to revisit the movie yet, even though it's in the works and it's in the plans for us both to go back and revisit that so we can have even more thought-filled conversations on it. We're going to do a little bit of cleanup, maybe touch on some things that we forgot. And then there's this little show on Disney Plus in a Star Wars galaxy far, far away, Andor. We've not talked about it in a few weeks now, and a lot of big things are happening. This past week was the penultimate episode, episode 11. At the time of this recording, neither of us have had the chance to watch it yet, so we are going to be kind of visiting the scenes of the prison and the prison break and all that, because I think that's kind of where we left off in our Andor discussions. So we're going to be covering all that and then some best offs to wrap up this week. But before we get all to all that, Kyle, you've had almost a week now from this recording to process and stew on and just think a little bit more about Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. Is there anything that we missed last week in our episode that's coming to mind right away that you would like to discuss and talk about?
I think the biggest thing that we didn't talk about, we did not pay enough attention to Riri Williams. But the
hardest name in a character to say,
especially for me who has a slight like speech impediment, and just there's a lot that goes on to it. But Ironheart, yes. It's weird because we didn't pay much attention to her last week on our podcast, but the movie didn't really either. Like, there's a lot that goes into her character, and this is a good almost origin for her so that we can just jump into the Ironheart series. But I mean, you could easily take her out, minus one big scene, which I do want to talk about. Minus one big scene, you could almost take her out of the movie, and it's very she doesn't need to be there. You could just put a faceless name in there as far as the scientist who built whatever. Like, she wasn't in a super important character, which is a slightly disappointing, but at the same time, I still really enjoyed her in the movie. Like, she was still a good presence on screen. I think they did an amazing job casting the actress. I think she's going to be very fun in her rest of the time in the MCU here, but it's, yeah, unfortunately, I think there's a reason that we skipped her last week. Like I said, I think you could easily pick her out of the plot and not much would change, except for the fact I think it was worth it only because of the Queen Ramonda spoiler alert. If we haven't said that yet, or if you haven't watched the movie, the Queen Ramonda death scene, her making that sacrifice and no one really knowing, except for us in the audience and Riri, I guess, no one knowing that Queen Ramonda does this, but her making that sacrifice and going down swimming deep to get Riri and save her from drowning, I think is such a big moment. I think that sacrifice is going to play so much into her character development, into why she does what she does. She really just seemed like random, really smart MIT student who happened to be building some Iron Man tech and, you know, didn't really have much motivation beyond that. Now, her relationship with Shuri, her connection to Wakanda, and the fact that, hey, the queen of the most powerful nation on the planet just sacrificed, just kind of basically sacrificed her life to save me. I mean, like, that's, if that's not a huge part of her character going forward, I would be shocked. But I like that to me is the only reason they really made her a focal point of the plot, making her the scientist that Namor was after and that they were trying to save and everything. Yeah, I think it was big and I loved it. I absolutely loved the scene. I thought it was awesome because, like I said, we all knew Riri was making it out of this movie, but I guess none of us saw both of them being resuscitated at the same time. I don't think a lot of us knew that Queen Ramonda was going to pass at the same time. So like I think it was a very powerful scene. I think it's going to pay dividends into the future of Ironheart.
I think you put it quite well when you opened up with saying that we completely forgot to even talk about this character last week. And I remember when we were recording, I said, and I still feel that this movie felt the 2 hours and 45 minutes. And I know a lot of people have agreed with that and have said that, like, while they don't know what you would necessarily cut out of the movie, a lot of people feel like there should be like 10 to 15 minutes like shaved from this movie. And I feel like if you would take Riri Williams out of this movie, like you said, this movie could still work without her, minus that one scene, which you could still argue that you could rewrite that where Ramonda still dies, still makes a sacrifice, but it's not saving Riri if you don't have her in the movie. Like, there's a way where you can redo that and rewrite that. And I feel like her whole being in that movie, you could easily like take out and write around. I feel like this is the first time in a long time, if ever, that I felt like watching a movie that I felt like this was something that was on the to-do list, where you talk about how Kevin Feige is the main producer and it's kind of like he lays the land, and a lot of times like these directors, they can tell this story how they want to tell it, but a lot of times they have to follow certain guidelines and certain checkpoints and all that most of the time. And like I said, I feel like this is the first time that it felt kind of blatant, but a lot of times like it's unnoticeable. This for me was like the first time where it felt like you need to introduce this character in this movie, like figure out how, but this has to be in this movie. And I felt like she was one of the weaker parts of the movie. Like, am I excited to see this character in the future in her own show and developed and being her own thing? Absolutely. I didn't feel like she really worked for me at all in this movie. Just having, like I said, this almost week to process this movie and think about it. And a lot of people talk about Everett Ross, which we kind of talked about in Touchdown last week, and how like he felt kind of pointless in the movie too, which I would almost agree with, but I still disagree with, because I liked the MCU world building that came with his part of being in that movie with Val, and the fact that like he was such an important part of the first movie, it would have almost felt weird if he wasn't in this movie. And so that's kind of my arguments to keep him in. But Riri, I feel like you could have easily done this movie without her. Yeah, there's not a whole lot that I can add to the Black Panther Wakanda Forever stuff that we didn't touch on last week, because like I said, I didn't get the chance to revisit it over the weekend. This week has been very chaotic, to say the least, and so like I haven't had a whole lot of time to think about the movie. I did really enjoy it, though. And as heavy as it is and as tough as it is to watch at times, like I'm excited to go back and revisit it and kind of take it in a little bit more. Something that happened last week on Friday, the day that we dropped this episode, it's kind of weird that a comic book movie about a loss of someone and grieving and learning to grieve through that, if you're a big geek and you're a fan of the comic book stuff, a big titan in our genre passed away on Friday. Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman from Batman the Animated Series, passed away from cancer at the age of 66. Again, like, it's eerie that a comic book movie with one of the main themes of the movie is the title character dying of a disease, an incurable disease, which you can put two and two together and say that it's cancer, and then having a titan in the industry pass away the same day. It's eerie, but it would be a shame not to touch on it a little bit in this episode, because Kyle, I know you said that you were introduced to Batman through Kevin Conroy's interpretation. I think I would agree with that for myself personally. Batman's always felt like a part of my life, but the earliest memories that I can think of is the Tim Burton Batman movies with Michael Keaton, and then of course Kevin Conroy, just an iconic voice, like the voice of Batman. Arguably, you ask anybody who's a fan of Batman and they'll tell you that he's their Batman. It's Kevin Conroy and then whoever is your preference for the live action. When I'm reading Batman comics, I hear Kevin Conroy's voice, and that's very similar to a lot of people as well. He took something that was reworking itself. Batman was very much like the 1966, like the 60s through most of the 80s. Batman was like that campy joke of a comic book character. Like when people called comics the funny pages, like in the funny books, Batman was a big part of that. And arguably Kevin Conroy in Batman the Animated Series was part of that revolution of the character, that reimagining of the character, bringing this character into a darker and deeper persona that fits the character a lot more, that is now the character in today's point of view. I was shocked when I read it, and it was one of those things where I didn't believe it at first. I saw it come across my Facebook in the morning, and I was like, no, that can't be right. And then a simple Google search of Kevin Conroy, and that's all that showed up, was just the announcements of his death and all of the tributes of everybody, fans, people in the industry that worked with him who just adored him. And Friday, I had a pretty busy Friday, but I made some time to put aside and watch a couple of Batman the Animated Series episodes, just to kind of pay tribute to the legend. I've rambled quite a bit about it because he felt like a big part of my life, even though I didn't even know him. Kyle, I'll give the stage to you. I'll hand over the mic and let you say what you want to say about the man.
I mean, yeah, you took a lot of the words out of my mouth. Even I think my generation was probably one of the last to see Adam West and his Batman. And those are definitely my earliest Batman memories. But like, I don't remember much of it. Like if I went and watched those again, it would kind of be like the first time watching those. Everything Kevin Conroy did was like that was, it's almost like he had the goal to, he had the stage to really build Batman as the character he is now, which is one of the most, if not the most recognizable superhero names. Like, I think he helped popularize this character, and which is just insane to think about as a voice actor. Like, he's not even, I barely recognized this face when I saw a video of him this past weekend with a lot of people posting tributes to him. But like, just the fact that he was able to create the lore and the significance behind this character while only talking was just, I mean, incredible. Yeah, like you mentioned, every time I read a comic or read anything in Batman's voice, it's Kevin Conroy in my head. Yeah, just was absolutely the big one of the biggest parts in creating the superhero nerd inside of me. So, yeah, super sad to see that. I first heard of it when I was on Twitter and I saw that people were paying tribute at the statue, I believe in Hollywood, the Batman statue. People were paying tribute at that at the Batman statue, not a Kevin Conroy, anything related, just the Batman statue, which again says a lot. It's just, yeah, that one was a hard one when I saw that on Friday. And like you said, how apropos that it comes right after the superhero movie about loss. I mean, just crazy.
The same day that movie comes out.
Just insane.
Yeah. 30 years he was our Batman, and he portrayed the character for almost that entirety of that 30 years through the shows, through animated movies. He was the voice of Batman in the Arkham video games. There was a comic that was going around online that paid tribute to Kevin Conroy. It's drawn in the same style as the Batman, the animated series. Batman and Jim Gordon, they're up on the roof with the bat signal. And Jim Gordon says, "Hey, you're quiet tonight, more quiet than usual." And Batman gets out a notepad and starts writing on it and gives him a note. And it says, "Jim, I'm sorry I lost my voice today." And then instead of the bat signal in the spotlight, it's Kevin Conroy behind Jim Gordon. And then Jim Gordon says, "Of course, I'm sorry for your loss, my friend." And then Batman's swinging away saying, "So am I." Ooh, I almost got teary-eyed just talking about it.
I did too.
Very, very moving. All of the tributes that people have been giving out to the legend. Like I said, I felt like us being the Midwestern nerds, it would have been a crime not to pay our respects and our tribute to the man, the myth, the legend that was Kevin Conroy. We're going to bring up the spirits a little bit before we close up the episode, though. There's been a little show on Disney Plus, like we mentioned, a little Star Wars show that we haven't talked about in quite a few weeks that is very quickly becoming arguably the best Star Wars show, period, and maybe one of the best Star Wars things ever.
At least top three.
a little show that most fans, Star Wars fans, casual fans, were like, why do we need this? And it wasn't until the creative team came out and the pitch for the series and talkings of what this show was going to look like where I started to get excited. A show that was based on a character that like was not even in my like that maybe made my top three favorite characters in the movie that he starred in, maybe. Andor. I get that the show isn't for everyone. The ratings are kind of showing it too. Man. It's kind of sad,
yeah,
to even see that. The fact that opinions are subjective, so keep that in mind when I say this, but it's sad that it's getting less ratings than its lesser counterparts like Book of Boba Fett and Obi-Wan. Like, I get it. People love their Jedi. People love their lightsabers. People love characters that they grew up with and want to see them. I understand that. But, like, the people that are like, the show's boring, the show's not Star Wars, the show, like, I don't get it. I get if you're impatient, because it definitely took those full first three episodes for me to like be fully hooked. But to say that the show is bad, like the people that are saying that, like I don't understand it. Clearly we're watching completely different shows, because this show is incredible and it just keeps getting better and better and better. The last time that we talked about this show, I think was, and again, this show is, our podcast is always spoilers. You can just go into this, see the titles of it, and if you haven't seen any of this stuff, just avoid it until you do, because we come on here to talk about this stuff. So you had a little bit of a warning for the Black Panther talk earlier. This is your warning now for Andor. If you're not caught up through episode 10, probably turn this off until you do. Last time we talked about this, Cassian Andor was arrested and was thrown into a prison where they're building. It's like a factory almost where they're building something, which if I had to guess, is parts of the Death Star, because what else would they be building that they need as many people as they can to the fact that they're not releasing them? Like, they are in there until death.
Think about the biggest thing in the early movies where they're always behind on building the Death Star, right? So what other panic move would there be than to, oh, let's trick our prisoners into building this? Like, yeah, it makes complete sense.
Let's arrest people sometimes for no reason at all, other than just being in the wrong place.
I'm just a tourist. At the wrong side.
Exactly. And keeping them as long as they're able to work.
Until they die.
Yes. Which is what this whole last 3-episode arc built up to. We're going to mostly focus on the climactic episode, that third episode in that arc, because that's where most of the meat and potatoes were. We definitely get a sense of what's going on, a lay of the characters. We meet Andy Serkis's second character in Star Wars. No, he's not Snoke, or at least we don't think he is. But
apparently
he is,
he's not dead. Yeah.
Kino, a name that, if you are a TMNT Secret of the Ooze fan, that name will hold a special place in your heart. Kino in Star Wars, he's almost like the manager on their production floor. Like, he's there to keep everybody in line, make sure that everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're supposed to meet certain numbers by the end of the day. And he's trying to make sure that everybody's meeting those numbers.
But he's a prisoner himself.
Yes.
Which is just the most interesting part.
He's keeping everybody in line. And as soon as we meet him, we come to realize that he's got, 2 months left of his sentence that he knows of. And so he's very much like, we need to do what we're told, and I need to keep you all in line so that I can get out when I can get out. And that's kind of the whole arc of the first 2 episodes of that. We do get a little bit of stuff outside of the prison. We get Cyril, or as some people like to call him, Cereal, because he's always eating cereal with his mother.
Cereal Karn.
we get Cereal trying to work his way back in with, what's her name? Now I'm blanking on her name.
Hold on. Dedra Miro.
Dedra, yes. He's stalking her now. Getting a little creepy.
He's fallen in love, which I want to just touch on. I hope, dear God, that they don't go with the romantical side of this. I hope that they just keep it. He's super into her and she never bats an eye at him, because I like that. And I hope, again, we don't need to see any. They're the bad guys. We don't need to see anything with. We don't need to cheer for them at any moment. But I do love the stalkery, like, you're everything that I believe in and you're doing it perfectly, and you're fighting for the same cause. Like, I absolutely love everything with those two.
If they do, it's only to get them back into the INS, I think it's called, the Imperial, like, CIA.
She could easily play into it to get him back in there. Yes, but I don't think she'll ever go for him.
I don't either. But if they do,
I don't want them to.
if they do, it's for that sole purpose, is to get Cereal back in, and B,
Cereal.
The only reason that they would is because she's hate fucking him. Like, that's the only reason why. So that's going on. God, I'm so bad with characters. Cassian's ex. They interrogate her.
Bix.
Bix. They capture her. They interrogate her to try to find out where Andor is. The funny thing throughout this whole arc is that, like, the Empire is looking for Andor, and they don't realize that they've already caught him, which is the funniest thing about the whole, that whole arc right there.
Which is, it's, no, it, I mean, yes, it, no, it absolutely is. But it's like, it's so perfect with the story that they're telling too, because, like, the whole thing that Luthen is saying, like, he wants the Empire to be overreacting, to be doing too much. And, like, they are, and they upped these prison sentences, and they upped everything, like, that they're just taking prisoners for no reason. And it's oversight on their part because they're overreacting. It is falling into their trap, but at the same time, they're doing the right, at that, on their side, they're doing the right thing and bringing in these, because they are bringing in some of the rebels. Like, that part has been so interesting too.
Yes. Mon Mothma is put into a tight corner right now. Basically, she's trying to fund the rebellion, and her funds are being held, and she's having a hard time with money. She reaches out to her friend from her home planet. He's trying to help her out. The only way that he can is to hook her up with a gangster, with a mobster, and he's willing to help her, but he doesn't want money in return. He wants to be able to come back to Coruscant and hang out with the fat cats, with her and her senator fat cat friends, and doesn't want money, but he wants her daughter to marry his son.
The way you paused there, that was troubling.
He wants her daughter.
Yeah. That would be a little
maybe,
too dark.
Maybe he does. Maybe he does, but it's Disney, so we can't go that dark. I don't know. I mean, we just talked about Dedra hate fucking cereal, so maybe the show could get that dark.
Hashtag more sex in Star Wars. No. Nope. Please don't.
But it did in episode 3. This was the first Star Wars thing ever where two characters had sex.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Bix and her ex, who ended up Tim.
This show has given us a lot of firsts. We had that first sex. We had the first pissing. We had the first person peeing in Star Wars when Val and what's-her-face were hiding.
The show opened up with him going to a strip club.
Yeah. We also had... I want to say we had our first swear word too when one of the whoever the Scottish officer was, he dropped a shit in there, which I believe was like the first clear swear word that we've had in Star Wars. I don't know, I could be wrong on that.
This show is Star Wars for your parents. I mean, Star Wars is always
it's for us who grew up on it.
Star Wars is always supposed to be kind of all ages, and I love that this show is like, that's fine. Like, you can have your Boba Fetts, you can have your Obi-Wans, so that the kiddies can watch them too. But we're gonna pull a Game of Thrones and put it in the Star Wars galaxy.
Not quite that far.
Yeah, not quite
that far.
That's
basically porn from what I've seen.
Hey, unless that gangster does want Mon Mothma's daughter, that would be when we're getting into Game of Thrones territory.
Moving on.
We've been watching House of the Dragon, which is like the first like real Game of Thrones that I've watched since season one of like the original Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm glad that A Galaxy Far, Far Away hasn't been going that route.
All right, that's good. I never got into it.
Uncles are marrying their nieces, and sisters are betrothing their brothers, and. That's the kind of stuff that I guess we love to watch.
That makes my bones creak. I don't like that.
So, back to Star Wars, though.
Yes. Can I touch on a few of these things before we get into... You can continue your summary, but before we get into all the prison stuff, there's a few of those storylines that I do want to touch on.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, let's start with... We already talked about Cyril and Dedra. I do want to talk about Bix. That scene where she's getting interrogated and ultimately tortured, horrifying. Like, the fact that they tell us what they're torturing her with, but then we never hear it. They say that she's going to be, I think it's something along the lines of, like, the cries of children or the screams of children or something like that.
From, like, a dying planet.
And then we don't hear it. All we hear are her horrified screams. Just, I mean, oh my God, just such a good scene. It made me cringe. And like, I was like, oh my God, just give them all the information they need. Just start talking now. Yeah, that was, I don't think I've ever seen that before in a show or anything. Like, that was so well done. I thought that was so well portrayed through the screen there. I definitely want to talk about Vel, because we learn that Vel, there was a line in an early episode. I don't think we've talked about that episode anyway, but there was a line where Cinta was making fun of her for being in a rich family and running away from that wealth. And there was a lot of speculation of what family that was. We find out that she is actually the cousin of Mon Mothma. And we see her on Coruscant. Oh, look at me. I know that's one of the easiest ones, but sometimes I forget. We see her on Coruscant, like all dressed to the nines and everything, in the dress and the makeup, which was way different than what we've seen here in episode 4 through 6 or whatever. Like, it was very interesting to learn that, and to learn that all these rebels took a pact at one point. I'm very interested to learn about this pact, like where they took it, when they took it, why all these different people have taken this pact, when it happened. Like, I think that's going to come up at some point. It's come up a couple different times with a scene with Luthen in this last episode that we're going to talk about later too. But I thought that was so fascinating to learn that Vel is part of the Mothma family. I think that could be so interesting going forward. And Cinta, I mean, we learned that her and Vel are, I would assume, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it looks like they're in a relationship. It looks like they have feelings for each other. But
that's Cinta, what I would assume.
Cinta stays on Cassian's, not home planet, but the planet that his adopted mother lives. And she's kind of spying on the rebellion, because the Empire, because the Empire's there. And she is actually learning things, which is very interesting. Well, she's noticing that they're planting people there as well.
She's also on that planet because everybody's looking for Cassian Andor, yes, right now. Within this whole arc, the Empire is looking for him to arrest him, because they know that he was part of the siege that happened earlier. Luthen and Vel and Cinta, now they're all looking for him, mm-hmm, as well, because he's a loose end. And Cinta's actually sent there to find him and take him out.
But Luthen, it's almost like Luthen knows how important Cassian is, because he talks about him like it's Cassian. It's Cassian Andor. We need to find him. And it's almost like you can almost take that as in, we need to find him and take him out because he's a loose end, or we need to find him because we know how helpful he's going to be. Like, there's that little bit of doubt in my head that, obviously, we know Cassian lives throughout this show. We don't necessarily know what Luthen. I would assume he's going to die at some point, because he's not in
World One, and we'll get to it, but after probably one of the best monologues that I've ever heard in any star, not just Star Wars thing, but like probably one of the top monologues I've heard, mm-hmm, in a TV show, movie ever.
Skarsgård is so good.
After that, I kind of feel like he's not even going to make it out of the season now. Like, you can't deliver a speech about sacrifice like that and then like not make it out. You know what
That's
I mean?
Interesting.
I'd be very upset and I'd be very sad. We all know he's
not
going to make it out of this show, but if he doesn't even make it to season 2, that might be a big loss.
But you mentioned, like, it's so good that Cassian's in this prison. The Empire doesn't know that they have him, and the Rebellion doesn't know where he is, but they also don't know that he's also growing the Rebellion. Like, we know there's a character from, I can't remember his name now, but there's a character from Rogue One that we meet in this prison.
There's a couple.
Yeah. There's one main one that I can't remember. I wish I could find, if I remember, the Belvin or Blevin, I think was the name. I'm looking at this now and that looks familiar. I think it's Blevin, because Blevin plays a decent role in Rogue One, where he breaks someone out of a prison and he like leads into battle. Like, we're starting to get closer and closer to Rogue One, which again, I think is a very good storytelling device. But I love the fact, like you mentioned already, the Empire doesn't know they have him. The Rebellion doesn't know that he's building the Rebellion. And no one really knows that he's the centerpiece of this right now. And it's, but you know, actually, I shouldn't say that. There's one person who knows that he's the centerpiece of this, and it's Dedra Miro. And Dedra, I love when a show can put in such a good, competent antagonist, right? Like you can put in an antagonist and have them have the upper hand, but then be incompetent and dumb and stupid and whatever, and they make a bunch of mistakes, and that ultimately leads to why the hero can rise above. Having a good, competent, smart, like Dedra is putting everything together. She's basically figuring the puzzle out as we go. And it's like, it's building the suspense to how Luthen may die, how Bix may, like how Vel, how all of these characters could get caught / killed. It's so good to have that antagonist actually be able to achieve something. I think it builds the suspension even more and more and more, because we know that there's a second season. We're probably going to end on the Empire has the upper hand cliffhanger at the end of the finale. But like I just love everything they're doing with Dedra Miro. She's such a good antagonist right now.
She's definitely somebody that you love to hate.
Yes. The actress, I just have to mention the actress and that like that scowl that she puts on. And it's constant. So like good on her for being able to put that on and consistently. But then during the interrogation again, she like intensifies it and it makes it just a little bit more scary. I mean, the actress for Dedra Miro, she has been phenomenal.
She's showing more and more and more how dangerous she can be.
Mm-hmm.
But Luthen's, what do you call her? Like his assistant?
Yes.
That helps him in the shop. There was the scene where she meets up with Vel and she tells Vel that they need to find Cassian because he's a loose end from the heist and that he needs to be taken out. So they are looking for him to kill him.
Sure. And okay. But again, all the way back to that,
like
Luthen might not be. I'm just the way that Luthen talks about him, I think Luthen knows or just has that feeling about Cassian.
But he might not be, but the team rebellion is out looking for him, whether he wants him to kill him or not, to kill him. And Bix and all of his friends back on the planet where we first meet him, they're all looking for him because his mother's dying. She's sick.
Marva.
It's not looking good. So everybody's looking for him right now while he is stuck sitting in this prison, helping to build what Kyle loves, headcanon, is that, yes, they're working on the Death Star, parts of the Death Star. We don't know what parts, wheels, gears to something, but contributed to the Death Star.
They're like curved to build a sphere. Like it has to be, right?
Yes.
Or maybe that's what they want us to think.
So they're building this stuff, and Andor's crew, so his work crew, there's an older gentleman. He's getting weaker and weaker as we're going through these episodes until climactically episode 2, he has a stroke. Middle of work, he has a stroke. And Kino, Nandor, take him to the medic. And then all during this episode, there's whispers about things that were going on floor 2, I think they said. Something's going on. There's rumors going on. Everybody's trying to figure out what's happening. And this older gentleman, they're with the medic, and the medic's like, well, he got off lucky because he's now dead. Like he's not here to work anymore. And they're like, well, what do you mean? What's going on? What happened on this other floor? And this medic knows what happened. Apparently there was a prisoner that was supposed to have been released on floor 2, I think they said. And instead of released, he got transferred to floor 5.
Something like that, yeah.
Yes, and everybody on the floor where he originally was working, they found out, and because they found out, they killed off that entire floor. So, long story short, word gets out that their tallies of their sentences mean nothing because they're never getting out of here. And this whole 3 episodes, Andor's trying to win over Kino. He's trying to help get him the information that he has, trying to figure out, you know, how many guards there are all this stuff. And the episode ends where they find this out. Kino looks shook. And Andor, walking behind them, they're going back to their work area. And he's like, how many guards are there? And Kino says, no more than 12 at a time. And that's the way episode 2 ends, opening up for episode 3, the prison break episode. This episode was so good. This episode was so intense. Like, I was at the edge of my seat. I had goosebumps, like, the whole time. The show is called Andor. We've seen him in Rogue One. We know he's getting out. But at the same time, like, the suspense of how is he going to get out? Who's all going to get out with him? And how are they going to achieve this? Like, all, and the tension is just rising throughout this whole, even when they start to get the upper hand, it's still, you're still at the edge of your seat. This show makes you like question yourself as you're watching it. You're like, are they going to make it out? Like, are they going to have this happen? And all during this prison break, not just all of that's happening in this episode, but we also get the Mon Mothma with the gangster meeting. That's in this episode. And then we touched on it. We might as well talk about it now. Luthen.
Yes.
Gives out his Emmy winning monologue in this episode. If he doesn't get nominated for the Emmys and win, it's a fucking crime. It's
an injustice. Crime. Yep.
So basically, we're following an Imperial worker. He's not an officer, but he's part of all of the Imperial stuff that we've been seeing. And he's kind of been like a background character. Like, I think I maybe remembered seeing him like once or twice throughout this whole series so far, like just kind of being in the room where it happened. Like, that guy, he's in this elevator and we find out he's talking to Luthen and he's meeting up with him. We find out that he's Luthen's spy in the INS, IBS, whatever it's called. And he basically is going to tell Luthen that he's done. He's like, I got a family now. I've got a kid on the way. Like, I've been doing this for too long. It's too risky. Like, I can't keep doing this. I've got too much to sacrifice. And it's one of those things where, like, sometimes you watch shows or movies like this and you see the guy giving orders and you feel sorry for the people who have to take the orders. And this is like the first time I feel like ever where the guy who's supposed to follow the orders is like, hold on, what are you doing other than telling me what to do? Like, what are you offering to this? What do you have to sacrifice? And then Luthen gives his whole speech on sacrifice, and it could get, a lesser writer would make this very stereotypical, would make this so cliched, where it's like, oh, yep, that was needed, but, like, heard that before. This writing is so hauntingly beautiful in this scene. And Stellan Skarsgård eats this whole monologue up of this speech. Just some of the dialogue, like, I was like, somebody wrote this. like me, like, being a fan of writing and like trying to pursue writing in my life too, like, I was just in awe listening to this whole thing, hearing the things that the metaphors of the things that he's sacrificing everything. He, like, some of the lines of like, I'm sacrificing myself to bring a sunset that I'll never see, like, dialogue like that, where it's just like, holy cow, like, yeah, this, and just the delivery of it, where he's just like, yep, this is what I'm sacrificing, and you, that's fine, you want to leave and do that, but I'm not gonna let you, like, this cause is too big, it's bigger than both of us, you got to do what you got to do, basically, is what that whole confrontation came about. And it not only does it set the stakes, but it shows that Luthen is sacrificing everything, and, like, you have to take this guy seriously, because nothing is going to stop him from achieving his goal, which also makes like a potentially dangerous, deadly, and scary character as well, as charismatic as he is.
Yeah. I mean, oh my God, everything about this is just like bone chilling. Like when I was first watching it, I'm an ADHD guy. I'm on my phone sometimes, maybe playing games or something when I watch something, but this was something that I put down my phone and like leaned forward in my seat to pay attention to this and Kino's speech earlier in the episode too. But this was, I want to talk to you, cause you just recap this very well and everything about the speech, and it was phenomenal. But like the setting and the cinematography of this too, where they're in the bowels of Coruscant. Like they are 337 levels down or something like that. I can't remember the exact number, but they are like down in Coruscant, where we already know from past projects that's kind of where the street rats and those kind of people are, while the wealthy and that are way above. The fact that they're just down in Coruscant. He's on a ledge with just seemingly a bottomless pit underneath him is just so symbolic, where the trapdoor can fall anytime for him. He is going to fall. And when he falls, it's going to be for a very long time, but it's going to be for the cause that he believes in. He has been consistent throughout this series talking about, we need to do what the enemy does, but we need to do it for the right cause. And there's going to be sacrifice. There's going to be loss. And you need to be in on that. Like sorry, but there's no room for a family. Like I understand that you just started a family and everything. You want to get away from this, but you may be sacrificing that family by walking to them. You might be, if you go to them and we don't win this battle, you might lose them anyway. You need to stay in this, and we need to win this battle.
He puts it very well too, where he's like, you know, go and live your rich life with your family, be happy, but do it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
Which is basically like, yeah, you're going to keep doing what we need you to do.
Yeah, exactly. I just, yeah, everything. And I mean, him and his dark, he obviously wasn't in his wig and his fancy clothes. He switched into, you know, Rebellion Luthen, if you want to call him that. Like he was in his dark clothes and a big robe blowing in the wind. And like, it was just, God, it was just so good. And the guy never left the elevator. I mean, I don't know if the door is, if that's any other elevator, it's closing 5 seconds in with him, you know, like, it was just, man. And it starts, the fact that it starts while he's still in the elevator, we now are realizing that he's the spy. By the way, Star Wars loves having the ginger be the spy, apparently. That's happened twice now in newer projects. But it starts with him finding the earpiece hidden on the elevator. He puts it in. That's where Luthen starts talking. And that's where they start having this conversation. It opens up and Luthen is there. And then he just gives this epic monologue. I mean, yeah, just everything about this. It's true to the characters. It's true to the rebellion goal. Everything about it was just, that's what I love about this show so much. You talked about it not being Jedis and blasters and, you know, crazy foreign aliens, whatever. This show has been about the nitty-gritty of Star Wars. It's this underground, everything happening behind the scenes. We get, I mean, in one of the first couple episodes, we get Imperial workers eating ramen on the job, not even caring about what's happening, because it just, to them, it's just another job. But to some of these people, it's a really big issue that they're trying to focus on, when in reality, even that job that they're focusing on isn't even that big. But like everything Luthen does, he's doing for the rebellion. I'm lost for words at this point. It's just so, I think I've said everything, but like this, it looked amazing. Like you said, if he's not nominated, it's an injustice. This was such a good performance, and this is everything that we needed out of this character.
Then you mentioned Kino, Andy Serkis, being called upon to step up and lead, and his monologue that he has, which if Luthen wouldn't have had his monologue in this episode, like Kino, I would have been like, he was the standout. Like he was the standout of this episode, had the best monologue. What an incredible performance. Like so much of Andy Serkis's character and his portrayal of the character is facial expressions, is just seeing the fear on his face, seeing him swallow and do what he needs to do, his speech, which was basically like, climb, help your brother, but help him get out with you, like encouraging words of, you know, just getting out and starting that uprise of the prisoners too, of like, this is what's going on. That whole time they're in that room, I was like, are they going to kill those two guards or those two officers that were in there that were working the control panel? And then is there anything more you want to cover in this episode before we get to the very end?
Yes, there was. Well, not this episode, but the episode before, I did want to just bring up that we met. Oh, God, now I'm forgetting his name. But Forrest Whitaker's character in Rogue One.
Yes.
Saw Gerrera. Thank you. I think we should bring up the fact that Luthen flew out and went and talked to him and tried to convince him. I can't remember exactly, but he was convincing him to go meet with someone or be along on a mission or something. And Saw Gerrera declined because of, man, now I'm even struggling to remember that. That was weeks ago at this point. Yeah. But I thought that was cool. We got to see like early Saw Gerrera before he's got the breathing issue and you know, it's still younger. We saw two tubes as well at the beginning of the. I don't know if we're gonna see any more of him. That was the trailer shot that we got out of him, but I thought that was important too.
I did see an image from this week's episode, and he is in it.
Two tubes? I don't know.
Saw Gerrera's in it. I don't know how big of a role he has in this week's episode or how relevant he is, but he is in the episode. I did see that. But yeah, it was cool to see him. I like that we're sprinkling him in at the end of season one, because I think he's going to play a big part in season two, if not maybe the end of this season and then into season two. But I would assume season two, just because he's one of those characters like Cassian, where we know he's going to make it out of this series alive.
Yeah.
Because he's in Rogue One. But I think he's gonna. I'm excited to see what role he ultimately plays in this show. Let's bring it up to the end of this episode. I kind of had a feeling that Kino wasn't gonna make it out. I didn't know how, and that's kind of where part of that tension came from too.
Yes,
was he's like there the whole time, and it's like, and he's there long enough where you're like, oh. Maybe he is going to get out, and maybe they just like part ways and like we never see him again. And the way that they end his arc, it's very much open to that interpretation where maybe he made it, maybe he didn't, but they kind of allude to the point that like he didn't.
I can't remember if it was Tony Gilroy himself. I believe someone on the staff alluded to the fact, you know, doing the teasing part, probably for season two, the alluded to the fact that we don't know, maybe he's dead, maybe he's not. They like, that was an exact quote, like them teasing if he's still there or not.
Was smart.
Yes.
Because you bring in a talent like Andy Serkis, you almost have to write that conclusion of his arc in this season like that to potentially bring him back. Leaving that door cracked open where it's like, maybe he's dead, maybe he's not. If we choose not to use him again, he's dead. If we choose to use him again, he made it out somehow.
Before we go into the rest of the break, I wanted to mention off of his monologue too. Like, that is why, even though you've cast Andy Serkis before and he played the part of Snoke, whatever, like, this is why you call him again and say, hey, do you want to play a different part where you can actually, like, act? This is why you bring him in for this monologue and for his, like you said, his facials, just, I mean, almost bringing you to tears him yourself. Like you sitting there watching the fear in his eyes. And while he starts off so afraid and skimpish in that monologue, but then he almost like you can see it in his eyes, you can see it in his face, him realizing the importance of what he's saying, the importance of his role right now, and him just getting more and more confident in what he needs to do and delivering that message to the rest of the prisoner. Like it was, oh, so good. And this is why you call him and say, hey, come back. Even we know you've been in a role, technically come back, play this role. We might, you know, again, we leave it open-ended. So you might come back. You might not, whatever they ended up telling him. I just, yeah, everything about that was perfect. This is why you bring in Andy Serkis. I knew that they weren't just going to bring in a big actor like that just for this whatever role. And that's what made Andor's persistence so important. Andor knew that Kino was that important for that part of the mission, right? Like he, at one point while they're leaving their level, he tells one of the other prisoners with him, no, you hold down this floor, and he throws him a gun. So he basically doesn't have a choice. You hold down this floor. Me and Kino are going to take down the bridge. You're not coming with me. Kino's coming with me. He needed, not only did he need the information from Kino about the guards, he needed Kino on his side because he knew he needed the leadership that he saw in him. Like it was just top to bottom, everything about that character in these three episodes, just perfect.
Well, these three episodes very much continue to establish Cassian too. Like as soon as he gets into the prison, I love that the camera is like constantly following his line of vision. He's constantly looking around. He's taking in his environments. He's trying from the second he's brought onto the work floor. He's like, I'm in full on inspector mode. I'm trying to figure out how to get out of here.
Immediately he's scoping out details, like literally immediately when they're bringing him in for his first shift, he's scoping out details to learn about their operation. But he's also playing the prisoner part so well that no one even notices that he's doing this. No, none of the guards are suspicious at any point because he's playing that part so well. It's such a good role for Cassian because he's almost playing a part of the Empire at this point, where the Empire is playing this, oh, we're just building you guys up, we're protecting everyone right now, while they're secretly behind the scenes building a Death Star. Like there's such good contrast in almost every character in this show, but there's not enough time to go into every single one, but there's Cassian in particular, especially in these couple episodes, just such good development into the character that we end up seeing in Rogue One.
He plays the part so well that while he's, you know, riling up people to the cause of not just him out, but them out, he's also conniving in the fact that, like, he knows, like, the right people to play to get like on good terms with. He knows which people to utilize in which areas and in which skill sets.
The fake fight was perfect. He picked the perfect two people because they were the angriest looking natural people. Like those two were always, they always looked upset. So you immediately pick them to pick a fake fight. Immediately perfect.
He knows when he needs to take charge and lead. And he also knows when he needs to step back and let more important people in that situation lead. And all of that is just being solidified in these three episodes. Yep. Like this is, again, this was a character where going into the show, I was like, I do not care about this guy. And the fact that now we are 10 episodes in, it's like, this guy might be like reaching one of my favorite Star Wars characters. And before this, like I gave zero shits about him.
Yeah. Like I can't wait to revisit Rogue One after, not only after the first season, but fuck, after the second season. I cannot wait until it leads right into the movie. Like
I watched Rogue One before the show came out. And now that it's going to be over next week, I kind of want to go back and watch it again. Yeah. Like it just adds to the rewatchability. Yeah.
You mentioned the tension building and they did such a good job in setting it up in the first two episodes. again, Cassian learning his surroundings, his bathroom breaks where he was going in to cut the pipe. No, I had no clue what that pipe was or what the purpose of it was. I thought either they needed like a metal piece out of it, or it was like a power supply for the elevator or something.
Distraction.
Yes. I had no idea what it was for. The ultimate purpose was perfect, was great. The fact that he's soaking wet after he bursts this pipe and gets the water flooding, and the guards don't even know because they're so used to seeing these workers work themselves so hard that they're just sweaty and shit. Like, that was such a nice detail. One of the first things that I noticed was the boots, right? The rubber boots that the guards wear so that they don't get zapped on these floors. I thought from day one, from episode whatever this was, I thought that those boots were going to play a part in the, if you get a couple pairs of these boots, you can all of a sudden take out these guards, right? Like, if these prisoners put them on, you can withstand the floor. But instead, Cassian fries the whole floor and fries the power grid. They don't put the boots on, and the boots end up being an advantage for the prisoners escaping because they hear the guards coming around the doors or around the corners. Whereas they're all still barefoot and they're still being able to sneak around the, like, it's just so, such good storytelling. Such good swerving your expectations, not just to swerve expectations, right? Not doing something that doesn't make sense, but building a story and putting that in place so that the audience starts to think something and then you swerve the expectations in a good way. Like, it's just phenomenal.
We alluded to the fact that Kino's ending, while we think is done, it's kind of left open-ended. We get all the way out the doors of this prison, where when I totally forgot that this prison is like a dam, like it's surrounded by water. Yeah, it's the raft. I think we made that joke the last time we talked about it.
So.
It's the raft. I completely forgot about it. And everybody's running out the doors and they're jumping off.
Mm-hmm.
And Cassian and Luthen, they get out the doors and Cassian's about to jump off. And Luthen kind of takes a step back and gets out of the way. And he presses himself up against the wall. Cassian's like, "What are you doing? Like, come on, let's go." And Luthen's like, "I can't." Or not Luthen, Kino. He's like, "I can't." Cassian's like, "Why?" "Can't swim." And then Cassian gets tackled off the ledge by people that are trying to get off of this raft. And that's the last time we see Kino. So he either jumped in and drowned, or he stayed and is the only prisoner that stayed, unless there's others like him who can't swim, which there could be.
Absolutely.
And stayed and got re-arrested. Or he jumped off and somebody helped him, you know, somebody in the water, some buddies, like, yeah, helped him to shore.
The other really good visual that this showed was when they're in the command center before Cassian and Kino take it over, they're showing the map of the prison, right? And it's this black background with the yellow dots of the prisoners, and they're all kind of converging to one point. And then you have the actual prison break and you get the sky cam of everyone jumping into the water, and you have this bright, just illuminated, you're in the sun for the first time forever, but it's all these prisoners in their white garb jumping into the water and swimming away from the prison. Was just such a good, all the people converging and then all the people leaving was just such a good visual storytelling device. I absolutely love that part.
Any final thoughts on this episode, or where you think we're going to go in the last two episodes of the season?
I couldn't even tell you. I know that we saw Cassian and the other guard, or the other prisoner that I already mentioned, and now I'm forgetting his name already, but we saw them running away together once they reached land after they were swimming. So that's obviously going to, I would assume they're together through the rest of this. I don't know. Maybe they split apart again and find each other later in season two or something. But I thought that was very telling. Like, again, he built his rebellion and now he built other parts of the rebellion that's going to help in other places, but he's already kind of assembling his cast, his crew, which I thought was a nice touch. everything about the whole prison sequence, these three episodes in totality, was just so good. Again, the storytelling, the fitting the pieces together, swerving expectations, character development. I mean, the design of the prison itself was just so interesting. Like he said, the guards didn't care about them. They're just there to make sure everything doesn't go bad. And it's easy to just throw a grain of salt into those gears and disrupt everything, because the design of the prison wasn't the guards holding everyone in. The design of the prison was the prison and the electric floors. Once you throw a wrench into that, it's game over and you're able to take everything. Like, it was just, everything was just so well told and so well put together. I have no idea where these last two episodes are going to go. It's very, I think it's very cool that a lot of this season, we've had kind of three mini stories that have been told over three episodes. We only have two episodes left. I really like that, because we're going to be able to tell a three episode story, but we're going to have to cut it short and leave it on a big cliffhanger towards the end of this episode. And we know what characters make it out of this show, which can be a big detriment to a lot of shows if you do prequels. But the fact that they've introduced so many other characters into this, you don't know what's going to happen going into season two. You don't know who's going to make it and who's going to carry into that next season. You don't know how anything's going to happen, if they end up giving information, or, you know, what role they could potentially play. I honestly have no idea what these last two episodes are going to bring us, but I honestly will probably go watch the next episode right after we're done recording.
We're recording on a Wednesday. My schedule doesn't let me watch them until Fridays, which is why we're always an episode behind. All I got to say is, opinions are subjective, but if you don't like this show, you're wrong, because this show is absolutely phenomenal.
I hope word of mouth gets around about the show, and I've tried to do my part on spreading this show to the Star Wars fans that I personally know. There's people in our friend group, people in my friend group, people who have been on this show who have been like, yeah, I'm a few episodes behind, or yeah, I watched the first few. And I'm trying to tell them, man, like, get into this show. It is genuinely one of my favorite Star Wars projects ever. It's top three at least. It's just so well put together. It's not bang, bang, shoot 'em, you know, let's fight with a lightsaber, all these Jedi, you know, backstories. It's the nitty gritty. It's the behind the scenes. And it's just such a good story. I can't say that enough. It's reflected on Rotten Tomatoes too, which is kind of, it's a good barometer to kind of look at sometimes. The critic score is 92, which, yes, absolutely, I agree, should be higher. And the average, the audience score is only 83. So, like, there are those, I think there's those casual Star Wars fans who maybe only watched a few episodes and was like, no, this is dumb. You know, like, this isn't Boba Fett, this isn't Obi-Wan. So
that whole probably gave it two episodes.
Exactly.
And we're like, no, not going anywhere.
Exactly.
I'll admit, the first two episodes, it was enough to keep me intrigued, but I wasn't fully hooked until that third episode. So I can understand why people would jump off. But if you are one of them, you need to get back on this show. It's one of the reasons why we like to talk about this show on this podcast. It's because it's so good. Not enough people are watching it. I agree. I hope that people do start to trickle back onto it. I hope that word of mouth reaches them. This show came out at a very unfortunate time. When it first dropped, She-Hulk was still on. We were in the midst of House of the Dragons. We were like halfway through that. Lord of the Rings was also halfway through. So there's a lot of shows that could easily get other people's attention, especially if you only watched the first episode or two and you were like, nope, it's not hooking me. Like, I got too much on my plate right now. I'm going to watch this other stuff first. If you were one of those people, get back on this show, because it is so good. And Disney is going to start to push the show a little bit harder too, because next week they're going to be airing the first two episodes. And again, I was like, if you only made it through two episodes, like, I hope they change it to three. But for sure, Disney's going to be airing the first two episodes on ABC, on Freeform, on Hulu, pretty much any channel or streaming service that Disney has other than Disney Plus, they're going to put those first two episodes on next week. So hopefully that's enough to maybe get people's attention to be like, oh, hey, that was kind of interesting. I'd like to see what happens. Better get back on Disney Plus and check it out. That's a hope, because I want this show to get as much attention as it can and as much praise as it can, because if that happens, we'll get more Star Wars content like this. And I want more Star Wars content like this. I would rather have more content like this than the other two shows that I've thrown under the bus multiple times this episode, Book of Boba Fett and Obi-Wan. Like, Obi-Wan, that series should have been like this series. Like, I went into Obi-Wan expecting a show like this. Sure. And that's why I was like 50-50 on it, where I liked a lot of what I saw, but I also did not like a lot of what I saw, because I was expecting a show like this. And the fact that Andor is giving us a show like this, of all the characters in Star Wars, did I ever think that Cassian Andor would give us a show like this? No. But I'm glad that he did, and I want more people to jump on it so that we can get more Star Wars content like this.
If Disney's smart when they put these on TV, they play trailers before, after, during of the rest of the series. Not yes. Obviously not spoiling anything, but showing where the almost showing where the rest of the show goes and showing you what you might be missing. Because that's the easiest way. You show them the first two episodes, you establish what's happening, and then you try to lure them in with what else is going to happen. And I think they're smart enough to do that. I think we're going to see, I would assume, commercials. You're probably the first time we're going to see commercials for a TV show while the TV show is playing on TV.
But I hope so. Yes. I really, really hope so.
Because it would do wonders for the show, I think.
I'm sure we're going to talk about the show a lot more, especially since, like we said, the finale's next week. We'll probably earliest get to talk about it the week after, just because of Thanksgiving and just how schedules work out. But I cannot wait to see where the season ends and then hunker down for the long wait of season two. Because it's going to be at least 2024 before we get season two. So we have been your Midwesterners this week. That's MIDWESTERNERDS. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Midwesternerds. We are the Midwesternerds podcast on Facebook. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send that to midwesternerds@gmail.com. You can find and stream and listen to our show wherever you find and stream and listen to podcasts. Please remember to rate and review, share and subscribe. Be kind. Please rewind. All of these things help this channel to continue to improve and grow and be the Midwestern Nerds show that you, the listener, want to listen to. For your Midwestern Nerds this week, I have been Brian Stoffel.
I've been K.O. Kyle Olson.
And whether it's beer, brats, comics, or electrified floors,
keep it nerdy.